So,
Because it's a web page, I'm not. Oh, yeah, here we go.
There we go. Thank you there.
Thank you. My old eyes can't look at it regularly. Sorry.
That's a lot of us here. Or I should just talk for myself. I take that everybody got to review the draft agenda for today's meeting, and so we'll take a vote.
Sorry, but you need to call the attendance first, just for the record.
Oh, right. Sorry about that. Sorry about that, everybody. It's been a while.
Yeah.
So we'll call attendance, starting with myself. My name is Derek Mapp, and I'm a co-chair of the Community Engagement Subcommittee. TJ?
Hi, my name is TJ Limiaki.
To the next person.
Sure. I'm TJ Limiaki, council member and committee member. Richard?
Hi, everyone. I'm Richard Sullivan, committee member, council member, and co-chair of this committee also, and I'll pass it to Lee.
Lee Jewell, council member, and I will pass it on to Stephen.
Stephen Spano, the HCAP staff attorney at the AIDS Legal Referral Panel and a member of the public, and I'll pass it over to David.
David Jordan, council staff. Melina?
Everyone, Melina Clark, council staff. And I can pass it to Molly.
Hello again, Molly Herzig. I'm from Maitri, I guess community person?
Sure.
Okay.
Thanks a lot again, Molly. And so the next piece, well, actually, welcome to the New Year's, everyone. Returning to the draft agenda for today. I think that everyone had an opportunity to review the agenda, and I wanted to find out if anyone had any changes to the agenda that they would like to make, any adjustments. Seeing no hand raised, we're voting on approving of this month's agenda. And I'll just call out folks' name. Lee Jules.
You don't have to do a roll call vote for this.
Okay.
You can just approve by consensus.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Are there any nays to today's agenda? So by consensus, it is this month's agenda is approved. Can we bring up the draft meeting from last month? I was absent on this day. I'm sorry about that, folks. I take that folks got to review this. Were there any changes that anyone saw that needed to be made to this agenda? I don't see anything, so I'm going to say that there were no changes that were needed. So by consensus, is there anyone who disapprove of these minutes? Seeing none, the meetings minutes for November are approved. So our next what's happening here? Sorry about that. So next piece is announcements. Are there any announcements?
If it's okay, I need to announce, I'm working on a couple of time sensitive matters that need to be done by close of business today. So I'm gonna take off after my report and any discussion. I'm happy to stick around for any discussion of it, obviously.
Right. Thanks so much, Stephen. Any other announcements?
Sorry. I just wanna apologize for being late. Beth Neary, HIV Health Services.
Oh, hello, Beth.
Hi.
Thank you. Um, Seeing no other raised hands for announcements, let's move on to public comments. Are there any public comments? Seeing no hands raised, we'll move on to the HCAP report with Stefan Supano. Take it over, Stefan.
Thank you. So first, Happy New Year, everybody. It's good to see all of your faces. I really hope at some point we get to do this in person again. You alluded to the fact that I have a wide array of cases. In our last meeting in November, I perhaps preliminarily reported that we were through all of the RCFCI transition cases. That proved to be untrue, of course, because we hit some barriers to relocating some folks, but I am happy to report that everybody now is currently stably housed from that. We had varying levels of support, and we did have to engage in some advocacy efforts with regard to reasonable accommodations. And I thought it was worth noting, because one of the common things that we experience, not only in HCAP, but also at AORP in our housing cases, are denials of applications for housing, where clients who are low income or on public assistance or basically dependent on the very limited income derived from public benefits are unable to get housing because of their credit score, a lack of credit score, a negative credit score. And obviously, as we know, poor housing history where there was an eviction or some other thing that dings them on their credit report shows up. There are methods to kind of, advocate for clients. There are a lot of methods that are employed by landlord attorneys and public even by supportive housing facilities or supposed supportive housing facilities I think very wrongfully deny access to a lot of clients. I will say this, the HSA funded programs, I have not had that experience with, but the larger problem that we experience in San Francisco with regard to housing and finding folks housing, those folks who are not HIV positive really is affected pretty heavily by that. People here, at AORP have access to advocacy services and can go ahead and fight for their rights, under fair housing laws. But oftentimes I think, a great example of this is somebody who's not HIV positive, who first of all goes through the efforts of obtaining, finding an available unit, obtaining funding to move into that unit. And then, if it seems just so unjust that the next thing that they have to do is try to seek representation to force, a supportive housing facility or, supposed supporting purported housing facility to follow the letter of the law. And it's just infuriating for me to experiencing that time and time again. Again, this is not related to HHS, but I think it does serve the larger goal of, and I've made mention to this, getting to zero is not going to be possible if HIV is the best way to get care and get housing and get what you need in the community, then getting to zero is just simply not going to happen, because there will be people that will engage in behaviors to get those, to get those services. So it's a larger advocacy effort. I think I have to call all of these things a success, just because everybody now that came to AORP is stably housed through this process. But we can just do better as a community, and I want to, support that however I can. So I wanted to share that experience with everyone. But right now, everybody is stably housed, and I'm super happy about that. That really made my Christmas. It was like one of the last things that wrapped up before I left for a vacation. So I also wanted to share another success story with regard to you'll see on the first page, money management services. This is kind of another great example of where, I think we as service providers all want to meet clients where they are and try to match what it is that they need. It's not always, the easiest thing to do, and it's not always possible under the circumstances. But, you know, sometimes a conversation with HCAP can really help a client get to what it is they need just by using the right language and asking in the right way. And this was a great example of that, where, you know, the service provider was perfectly willing to support and meet the client with what they needed. It just needed to be communicated in a different way. So I think that's exactly what HCAP is all about. There are a significant number of dental issues, but I have a feeling a lot of that has to do with the timing of these cases. You know, I think people just at the end of the year tend to try to get their care in. And, you know, obviously the number of cases is going to go up for that. Some of them I'm in the middle of, some of them I've wrapped up before the holiday. For, you know, in a large part, folks have been service providers and consumers have both been very responsive and I think, you know, cooperative. But some of these are pretty, you know, wild. You know, they seem, you know, the reports of them appear pretty egregious, and I'm still kind of getting through the crux of those cases. So I'll keep everybody posted on what happens. With that, I guess I will turn it over to those folks. If anybody has any questions about a particular case, or if anybody would like some more information on what's going on.
So I really do look forward to getting an update, particularly, I don't know why I'm particularly interested in this, but I'm wondering a little bit how handling the inappropriate touching in the dental service, or just plain getting the wrong service that you had hoped to have gotten. Like, some of those things sound kind of interesting to me.
Mm.
But not necessarily like the details of it, but like the sort of process of addressing that. So it does look like the person that you're in the process of, or the service provider is in the process of investigating that. But in the meanwhile, I wonder how the client is doing under these sort of circumstances, which can be quite traumatizing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a good question. I think that's a pretty, you know, that hits the nail on the head. You know, obviously, you know, and that actually becomes a part of the conversation, right? Because we know that there are few dental service providers available. And so the challenge becomes going back to a provider. You know, obviously the initial thing is we're never seeing that dentist again, right? Like that's not happening, regardless of the truth or the veracity of the claim or any of that. The experience alone is enough to really, you know, kind of make that relationship untenable. And so what, you know, we can find another dentist, we can find another doctor, we can do those things to try and accommodate how the person, but sometimes simply walking into the room alone is just re-traumatizing and difficult for a client to kind of re-experience. And so that is a part of the process is, you know, okay, we have to talk about what are the available options and is this a thing that you can actually overcome to be able to receive the care that you need? Because regardless of the circumstance, there simply aren't alternatives in a lot of circumstances, especially when it comes to dental services, and in particular, higher level of dental services, because oral surgery versus, you know, getting a cleaning, those are two totally different levels of care. In the same way that, you know, like AORP operates with a student model, right? We have law clerks here that can support, and sure, they can draft a reasonable accommodation letter that I can review and kind of sign off on and say, yeah, this is great and this should do the trick. And well written, good job, here's some notes. But having them defend an unlawful detainer from from, you know, from beginning to end is something that they simply aren't capable of doing, and certainly something that would probably traumatize them. So you know, there are problems on both sides of the spectrum with regards to how you manage that situation. And, you know, I got to hand it to, you know, a lot of the clients really, you know, for me, my process, right, is always my goal is to make sure that an HCAHPS goal is the stated goal is to make sure that a client stays connected to care. So right now we're kind of in this first stage where we're trying to determine is the client able to move forward with this. We're trying to sort out exactly what the steps are, because the provider has, you know, several different, there's kind of several different prescriptions for how to manage this. There's grievance process, but then there's also an internal complaint department, and there has to be an internal, you know, an internal investigation. And, you know, they appear to be handling all that steps, those steps, but the client still remains uncertain. Where am I at in that process? Do I need to file something else? Do I need to talk with somebody else? Do I need to find a lawyer? You know, and so that walking them through that process is what my job is. But my goal is always to make sure that they're connected to care. So my first question to them, and one of the things that we're managing right now is this, you know, I need to assess what your goals for our representation are, because I can only go so far, right? And if referring you to alternative service providers is where we're headed with this, we might as well jump to that step right away and make sure you're connected while we deal with all the other stuff on the back end. And if not, then we have a different process. And then obviously we're really lucky again, because we're here in San Francisco, that we have a network of services that I can help connect people to. So in this instance, when he, you know, when he's having these moments, and I do get emails from him often about, you know, what he's feeling, and, you know, I was thinking about this over the holiday, and this is really affecting me, and it's, you know, and all of these things that they were kind of, you know, experiencing and kind of perseverating on. Well, are you speaking with mental health services? Do we need to connect you to mental health services? How about, you know, and so that's another step in the process. And that's one of the things that I love about HCAHP. I'm not saying I love this situation, it's an awful situation, but one of the things that I love about HCAHP is because of the role that I sit in, I'm able to connect these dots and make sure that a client is connected holistically to all of these service providers when they're going through some of the worst moments in their life.
Right. Thank you. I don't know if there were any other questions or comments. I know this isn't a shy group, so I'll take that as.
So I have a quick question. So Stephen, you kind of talked a little bit about this. So I'm just curious, in that situation, does that person get bumped up to an actual dentist and not a student, if that's the facility it's happening at?
So first of all, there's more than one service provider that operates on a student model. So that's not dispositive of where the clients are at, but I have had circumstances where, so this is the first case that I've had where this was the report. I have had clients who have reported, and also just so we're clear, that I have no facts of the case. This client had this experience and this is what they're reporting, and that's how I'm handling the case, is what they're reporting. And through the grievance process, that will be the language that's used, like what the client reports. And you know, I know through conflicts that there's always many realities occurring. And so I want to make sure that the client is supported with the ultimate goal of making sure they're connected to care, and then walk them through this grievance process. That being said, this is the first time I've had a client report this type of behavior. I have had clients who have had care, like quality of care issues, that have resulted in both results. So I have negotiated for clients that they go back to the same facility and move from a student dentist to having a more senior person do that work. And I have also had clients who that's not really important to them. They just don't want to see that person again. And so, you know, the negotiation really stems from what meets the client's needs and what we ask for. And that's part of the process of working with them, is trying to suss out what is important to them.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so not hearing any other comments or raised hands or questions, I want to thank you, as usual, Stefan, for your great work.
Well, thank you all. I appreciate it.
And so I think I know that you just said that you'll have to sign off, but thanks for giving us a wonderful report, and look forward to some of the updates.
Absolutely. I'll see you all at the end of the month for the full council meeting, and I hope you all have a happy new year. See you soon.
As well. Thank you. So our next report, we're a little ahead of schedule, which I think is fine. Our next report is for the needs assessment updates and COLA targets. Is that you, David?
So we're making some internal changes with planning council staff, and moving forward, starting here in January, Melina is going to be taking the lead on needs assessment and COLA stuff. I imagine we'll also be folding Kira into that in a little more robust fashion, and I'm going to be stepping away from it a little bit. I will still be involved in more of a advisory capacity for a little while, but questions and sort of strategy around needs assessment and stuff is going to go through Melina from now on. So I'm going to let Melina start right now.
Thanks, Dave.
Congratulations, Melina.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing more needs assessment and continuing with COLA. And so I can provide brief updates on our 2021 targets, but I also was thinking it could be a good idea for us to start the conversation on what we want this year's targets to be. You all don't have to decide today, but I think it could be good to get an early start and get the ball rolling on that. And I don't actually have a ton of updates on the 2021 targets. We still haven't seen any movement on the COLA target. Been reaching out in communication with a provider at the Kinney, and nothing has materialized, unfortunately. And I think now with everything that's happening with the current COVID surge, I foresee that continuing to be difficult. And I know that Dave and Richard were talking and collaborating. And it sounds like there, from when Dave and I talked earlier, it sounds like there haven't been any new updates, but I wanted to ask if either Dave or Richard wanted to speak to that.
Yeah, so just as background, as some of you might remember, Richard said he might have some connections to help out with outreach in sort of the capacity that he had been working with Needle Exchange and another program through UCSF, I believe. And he passed me some names from staff at the Empress and the Windsor, I believe. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, Richard. I'm looking to sort of follow up with them and maybe develop something we can at least put a capper on that COLA around housing that we were looking at last year and sort of potentially wrap that up. It seems like it might be a good fit, although I still need to have those conversations.
Yeah, that was the Windsor and also two case managers went 55 and 95 Laguna. And so they're amenable to talk.
Nice. So is this still considered rather on task, or are we sort of moving towards the outer edges of whether this would be a viable needs assessment report?
So that is, that was the COLA.
COLA, sorry about that.
I mean, Melina and I sort of talked about this earlier today, and that you know, there is a sort of like, ordinarily we would in previous years and in general would endeavor to have wrapped up all of these efforts within a calendar year, especially the needs assessment, because it is connected to a HRSA requirement. But I think we all sort of have to acknowledge that you know, last couple of years have been especially challenging, and outreach is going to be hard under any circumstances. Every time it feels like we're getting, things are easing up, we have a new wave of new infections and lockdowns and bullshit. And it's challenging and people are exhausted and it's not a priority for folks. That said, because of all of that, I think that, you know, there's a certain amount, there's a bit of an asterisk on our efforts. And I think that we've gone down a path a little bit. We've developed materials for that previous COLA, we've developed materials for the previous needs assessment as well. But since we have a solid lead on that COLA, it feels like it makes sense to at least try and run that string out and utilize the materials we put together. Beyond that, that's the sort of conversation you guys are having today. Is do you want to continue on the path we're on and seek to sort of re-strategize? Do you want to pick a different topic? Do you want to scale something down or up? Or, you know, I'll let Melina take it from there.
Thanks, Dave. I will, I think, you know, turn it over to the group for if anyone has ideas or thoughts on what Dave said. So either potentially picking new targets or continuing with what we've been doing, or potentially doing a scale up or a scale back of what we've been doing. And I also prepared, just for everyone to have an idea, a list of the most recent targets we've done for needs assessment and COLA. And I also pulled up notes from last year, and I have a couple ideas that were floated by this committee around picking targets. But first, it looks like, I'm not sure who put their hand up first, TJ or Beth.
TJ. Okay.
Thank you. I was just gonna ask you if you could tell us some of the needs assessments we've done in the past and considered in the fall. And then could you just, I'm kind of blanking on this. I think I have half the idea of what the COLA assessment's supposed to be about, but could you just flesh that out for me? Because it's been a while now, a couple of months.
Yeah, sure. So last year's COLA was around housing, specifically people who accessed shelter in place housing during the pandemic.
Okay, thanks. That's what I thought it was. Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Beth next.
Sorry, yeah.
I'm just wondering, because I know one of the issues has been that it's a survey and trying to get people to send emails and then administer the survey and email back gift cards has been challenging, which makes a lot of sense. And I don't know if this is any more viable, possibly less, but like a virtual focus group is another possible format. And that is just like a date and time and people either come or don't, and you either have a large representation or a small, but sometimes you have something. I don't know if for this particular topic that's viable, but just an idea of we've done in-person versions of that before, sometimes when we had trouble getting surveys in other projects. I don't know if a virtual version is easy to do, but just a thought.
Thanks, Beth. I feel like we did float that idea recently, or I guess a while ago now. It sounds like the main issue with the people I was talking with was that clients just didn't seem interested for whatever reason. We proposed multiple options. So either people could send a survey by email. The case manager I was talking to also offered to print out paper surveys and have clients fill them out with the case manager's help in the office in person. I think when we were discussing virtual focus groups, I think the worry was that it could be difficult to facilitate and have everybody feel comfortable sharing, as well as like not one person dominating the group, just like, which are also concerns in person. But I think based on our experience with in-person focus groups, we were hesitant to try the virtual, but I mean, based on how everything's been going, it might be worth revisiting. And it sounds like if that has worked for you all, like maybe it could work for us too.
Not yet the virtual, and not everybody has come to our in-person ones who's RSVP'd. So it works for something, not as well as, you know, everything.
Okay, cool.
I think, and I had, with the people that I was attempting to collaborate with for the needs assessment, that idea was floated. And that was sort of like, do you want, if you want to do a, you know, if you can recruit for us a Zoom focus group, happy to facilitate that. If you want to try and do a some version of hybrid, we could do that. The problem is we still need them to do the survey. And that is a little bit challenging in the Zoom because they still have to sort of, we still have to get them the survey. They still have to send them back to us. And we still have to get them the card. We still run into all of those vetting and verification aspects, which are challenging. And I'll be honest, I didn't get the sense that it was clients that weren't interested. I got the sense that it was service providers who were incredibly overworked right now, managing both their standard caseload and having to deal with COVID-related challenges, actual COVID-related aspects of their job, additional services because of COVID, and also the challenges of doing their jobs remotely because of COVID for some folks. And people are just, I think that there was a certain amount of prioritization around like, what do we do here? Do we prioritize recruitment for these policy jerks who are trying to do this thing that may or may not actually have a real world outcome for our clients, or do I focus on my individual clients who need my help? And I totally get that. And in past years, when I could sit down at somebody's desk and look them eye to eye and, you know, and try and sort of, you know, negotiate something when I could physically go meet with people. Cause that's a thing that happens regardless every year, is that prioritization process and convincing service providers who help recruit for us that this is worth doing. But under these circumstances, I think people are just tired, unfortunately. But yes, that's always an option. I'm actually open to literally any option. I was in talks with some folks about doing an in-person focus group with a group just before Omicron started up and became an issue. And it was just like, well, I guess we're back to the drawing board. You know, people were just feeling comfortable doing things in person again. And then that was just blown out of the water. So I know Richard was waiting.
Yeah. Richard? You're on.
Yeah, so this is like the perfect storm for things not to go right. I mean, the turn of the new year, the new variant, the prior pandemic things. So we've been, not you guys, but like Needs Assessment and COLA has been struggling like for the last three community engagement meetings. Would it be easier, Melina, just to, Dave, you mentioned HRSA and requirements, but so to speak, are we on the hook for 2021 or can we just like breathe, regroup and go forward with 2022 with like, let Melina take a little time, decide where we want to go with this and then just start fresh over the next couple of meetings, build a new body of work and see where we want to go. Because it's really been, everyone's been on the fence. This has been hard. And instead of teetering, can we just take a time out, refocus and move forward in 2022?
Yeah, I would say that because of that requirement is sort of, you know, calendar year based in some ways. And often we're trying to get it done. It is to inform the prioritization, which we missed by a wide margin. We should not consider this a sort of like we're in rush mode to complete last year's. But I think that it would maybe be a good idea to try and not throw out the baby with the bathwater as far as that goes, as far as the work we did towards last year. So if there was a way we could potentially modify what we did last year, as we said, maybe scale it or do something with it, or possibly completely start fresh with a different target altogether. I think all of those things are on the table.
Thanks, everyone.
I would just add into that conversation. So it's kind of the council's, I'm not quite sure if the word charge is right, but just to kind of advise on how to, what do we do, right? So what you just said, Richard, kind of triggered that for me. It's like, okay, what are our options here? Staff have been, you know, they've been given a task to do this particular work. It's not going to happen. So how do we handle that moving forward? From a DPH perspective, all contracts have basically been given a pass just due to COVID from that perspective. But Shanti staff are easy to work with and willing to work with us. So I like the fact that the group's kind of thinking about things critically and what can we do, if anything.
Thanks, Thomas. I wanted to make certain, I thought I saw some movement there. I just make this statement and then you next, Beth. I know that I have been, I've re-engaged in-person meetings, and if it is at all helpful, that's something that you can meet with at least two of my small groups. That happens weekly, and we could set something up, an engagement with those two groups. But let me know if that works. The only other question I have around that is, and again, for me, it's much more around the quality of the work than just the idea of, you know, just, you know, doing it and it, you know, is the information that you get out of it worth your while? And so that's always the question in my head. Beth, and then Thomas.
So I'll admit it's been a lot of years since I've read the Rye Part A manual, but my sense is this requirement used to be a broad-based requirement of a needs assessment of all of the needs of people living with HIV in San Francisco, at least the uninsured or underinsured, in some areas that we have services, and that there used to be like a big report that we contracted out that was done, and that over time we moved to this COLA and needs assessment strategy that has been sort of like a good model for actually the need, like it's been a, sort of the Cadillac version. But I wonder, since the part we're struggling with is getting the client engagement, if there is another way to do a needs assessment that HRSA allows that doesn't have the client engagement, especially since even this particular body has clients included, like maybe there's just a way we could do something smaller, still work on doing those things, but like there might be like a way to check the box to relieve pressure. I don't remember what's in that. So I can go back and read it, but not within this meeting.
I can actually speak to that a little bit because as the person who's, it's been kind of my purview for almost a decade at this point, which is so scary, it is really up to interpretation. Previously, before council staff took over doing the needs assessments, it was, we did contract it out. And I, if I remember correctly, the last one we did done by an outside contract, an outside consultant, I think we had something like 11 participants. It was real meager. And it was, that was supposed to be a sort of like expansive broad spectrum needs assessment of the whole population. And they were only able to recruit like 12, 11, something like that. It was small. TJ might remember if he was around then. And I think it is only improved since we took it over, but I agree. And so similarly, before the two councils merged, because the prevention council also had a mandate, a community engagement mandate, which they fulfilled via one community forum generally. We could potentially just do one community forum on telehealth or HIV positive folks' well-being and sort of perspectives. It could be completely open and just have people tell us what they think about whatever they're thinking. We could even do it as part of a full council meeting and include any council members who are HIV positive as members of the public to fulfill this. There are lots of ways to fulfill this. Does it give us interesting, effective data that informs our prioritization and decision-making? Maybe not. If the idea is to check the box, we can check the box and still endeavor to do to develop interesting data in on parallel terms, you know? Just putting that out there.
Hey, Thomas.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Beth. That's actually, part of me is just thinking even a survey of service providers, right, as well, we might be helpful that we have access to in our networks. Another thought is just there is surveys happening. Like we just do a ask for other people's surveys and do some kind of broader analysis of that. Cause I know there's a lot happening in the TL right now with regards to overdose and safe injection facilities and things along those lines, like people's needs around that and so forth. Derek, you, I do realize you kind of said that you're meeting a person and Omicron is definitely here. It's highly infectious. And I feel like the health department just hasn't put out anything more aggressive around not meeting in person, just due to the fact that I think by the time we put something out, it'll be behind us, just the nature of how things move. So we're feeling that this surge is just gonna, it's gonna hit hard and fast. So the fast part will be good with regards to, but it is highly infectious. And so it worries me a little bit, just to put that out there, that you're meeting in person with folks that, so take care of yourself, and I'll be a little parental. And at the same time, for this body of group, hopefully we'll be looking at least Omicron in the rearview mirror the next time we meet. So, and pending any other variant, hopefully coasting out of COVID with an optimistic, if that helps at all with the planning process for the year. So I've said that three times already in the last 2 years, so here we are. But yeah.
Thanks, Thomas. I know that we're taking all due precautions, and they are really small groups as well.
No worries. Again, I trust your judgment, Derek. It's just like, I was like, well, why are we putting something out there? And it's like, I feel like, seriously, we'll probably peak in 10 days. So by the time we got a message together, put it out there, it'll be 10 days. And so
yeah.
I still feel like people need to be really vigilant for those 10 days.
Absolutely. I think you were next, Richard, and then TJ. Yes. You're next, if you unmute.
No, TJ next.
Ah, got you. Sorry. Go ahead, TJ.
It's okay. Oh, all right. Thanks, Richard. Yeah, I was just going to say, Thomas, I like your idea about reaching out to service providers to get their, you know, their information. And then like with Dave mentioning, you know, doing it with council members or other groups, and could we merge them as sort of a hybrid and getting views from both sides? And that might make the information a little more, you know, I don't know, qualitative or something. So.
Thanks. Richard?
Yeah, along those lines, what Beth was saying and Dave chipped in and everyone about checking boxes and maybe the parameters of this. If we have part of it, like TJ just said, we have so many council members. If there's, let's say, I don't know the numbers, but 90 council members, 30% are required to have this. I'm an unaffiliated consumer. Let's say that's 30 people if we polled them. My life is good, but I still utilize many HIV services on a daily basis in my life. I'd be willing to be polled if we could put something out to the council en masse or the, I don't know, anonymity requirements, but people who have the virus on the council, poll them and say, would you like to be part of this? Would that be like the path of least resistance or taking an easy route, or would that be feasible? I'd be very willing to do that. And we could grab double digit council members and mesh them in with some community members. Like I say, this is just surface. I use a lot of the services that we talk about on a daily basis in this group.
Good thoughts there, Richard. Melinda, I think you were probably
saying. Thanks, Derek. I wanted to just float a couple of the ideas that I pulled from last year's notes. I think it sounds like we're figuring out a lot of good methodology stuff right now. And I just want to throw a few targets in the mix that were mentioned last year, just to add to the conversation. And from last year's notes from February around this time, there had been, which I think Dave mentioned, telehealth floated as an option for a target, as well as mental health. And I'm also just gonna, I think I'll just put it in the chat, but I have the past 5 or 10 years of targets here for needs assessment and COLAs that I'll paste here too. Did this work? Let's see. Yeah. And it seems like just what Dave was saying and what folks are saying about the forum idea, to me that seems like a great way to not only check the box, but at least gather some data, as well as we could, you know, potentially combine that with other ways of collecting data that might be more, intimate isn't the right word, but just I think having a one-on-one conversation with someone like we usually do for interviews could, or in-person focus groups could give us different information to bolster what we get from a forum. So I wonder if we could try to combine different methods of data collection, like folks are saying.
If I can interject. So, I mean, it sounds like the group here may be open to some sort of creative problem solving around how to do this. It also sounds like people are interested in the idea of looking inwards and utilizing the sort of community resources that exist within the sort of 40 something members of the council itself, which is, I'll be honest, is gonna make Melina's life a lot easier, I assume. And I feel like we have a much better access to those council members. So maybe that is a thing. And I guess, so two things I heard. I heard Thomas and maybe TJ talking about the idea of engaging with service providers. And that was part of our conversation last year, if you'll remember. We were talking about challenges around substance use, overdose, and so forth. An idea that was floated was that we approach that from a provider side as a COLA, because the COLAs are not part of our HRSA mandate. We can essentially do what we want with them to get the kind of information we are interested in hearing. Yes, it sounds like there are other people working along that track. So, and I think the reason we didn't move forward with this idea was because we wanted to hear from somebody like Laura or maybe Paul around this. And so I think that should still be on the table as an idea. Maybe that's the COLA. Maybe that's a COLA. But going back to sort of doing something internal, to me, it makes a certain amount of sense to potentially just do schedule a 30-minute focus group, a 30-minute public forum, or whatever you want to call it, as part of a pre-existing scheduled full council meeting. Instead of a presentation, maybe we ask any members of the public, any council members, and we do a certain amount of recruiting ahead of time, potentially, to see if we can get additional members of the public to turn up, and just have a forum and specifically focus it on the challenges of the last 2 years around remote accessing care, which was what the COLA was focused on. We're supposed to be focused on, especially since we've already done a lot of the sort of development around putting together a survey for that. It would be pretty easy to get that survey out to all council members. Presumably we can get it back from them quickly, and even some other community members. And maybe that way we can at least check the box, get that off of our plate, and start thinking in terms of what other strategies we can use to access different types of information from folks.
Well, I'm wondering, David, why not truly make it an internal process, which does sound really interesting to me, and just keep it to the council, like looking at the council and the work that it's doing on behalf of community.
So, are you saying you would like the focus of the conversation to be on the council and its work?
Yes.
Well, the thing is,
as an internal process,
we do that already with evals, though. That's kind of the point of the evals, is an ongoing conversation and surveys around the council's sort of internal process. I guess if we're going to actually check the box.
Well, not in regards to as it reflects on its work in community. Those evals are much more around the process of our meetings as opposed to our work in community.
I hear you. I just think that is focused again. If we're thinking in terms of checking the needs assessment box, this has to be focused specifically on those HIV positive council members, which sort of leaves, if the conversation is on the work of the council, and we're leaving off a whole third of the council in that conversation, that feels problematic to me. I would honestly, I don't know that it truly checks the box as far as assessing the needs of the community. I guess it feels more true to the spirit of the requirement that we speak to HIV positive community consumers, or not even consumers, HIV positive folks who our council members about their personal challenges or their personal perspectives, as opposed to sort of it being sort of internally focused on the council itself, because we do a fair amount of, like, we do the grantee assessment, we do the evals, you know, we have a lot of conversations and steering around those sort of things. It feels like that's somewhat adequately covered, if not extensively covered. That is, of course, your guys' call on what that the focus of that if in fact this is what you guys decide to do. I don't think that that's been set. That's, and again, just my perspective on what, how we meet that requirement.
Sure. Thomas?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the conversation. I just kind of want to ferret out what I'm hearing from two different perspectives or two different deliverables here. One is just the checking the box due to the fact that we're in COVID, right? So we just can't do a needs assessment with people living with HIV due to the fact that we can't, in person is a barrier, right? So, but we could check that box, is the terminology that we're using, by doing something relatively low lift by a 30-minute presentation or something with regards to people living with HIV who are part of our council and maybe an additional few people invited in, right? So I feel like that's one conversation. And then the other is a conversation around, I feel the council is, we have bought and paid for lack of a better word, assessments, right? And so how do we best utilize that resource and the talents of Shanti to get us some information that drives our work in some way, right? So that's this, are we all on the same page? Is that the conversation we're having? And if that is the conversation we're having, it would take a little bit more of, like, what would we want to learn is what I'm hearing from Dave, that we don't already know. And we don't already have a mechanism for gathering information. So that first question of, like, are we talking about how to utilize the hours that have been set aside for needs assessment to give us some information? And if so, what as a body do we want to learn? Is that a fair process comment?
I think there's a third one at play in the interviewing of the providers, either on the council or outside.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of the alternative.
About their, what they're learning about the clients and their services.
Yeah, and I was thinking, Beth, that was kind of the alternative to the fact that we can't speak to people living with HIV themselves due to COVID, that our alternative was that.
That makes sense.
And I like the idea. I feel like if we can, I feel like the needs assessments and the COLAs have relatively been on repeat, and they're not really yielding anything significantly different or any aha moments that warrant the amount of time and energy that staff put into them. And so if we can do something a little bit different this year or significantly different and try to learn something different, then that might be worth the pivot. But that's just my, yeah, I'll stop there.
Thank you.
I need to sort of, are you saying if that is your perspective, that is, or are you saying, like, in a sort of like, is this, are you asking the question or are you stating a perspective that we're not getting anything out of the last few years of needs assessments and COLAs?
I didn't say we're not getting anything out of the needs assessments the last 3 years. I just think that they haven't yielded anything that I have seen has been a aha moment that warranted us pivoting our funds in any significant way to meet an unmet need. I feel like the council, for the most part, has been in the same funding cycle for a while now, and we haven't done any significant pivots for a significant amount of time. And that's just due to the fact that we're really well positioned with regards to who we are serving and our that we're meeting the most vulnerable needs.
So to that, I would say that
But David, before you continue, I just want to give a time check. We have about 4 minutes left in this piece.
Okay, but I feel like I need to make the point clear here, and I'll try and do it quickly. That Yeah, the funding situation is largely on rails because of the way contracts are set up with DPH, because of the sort of the process, and also because of the efficacy of the systems in place. We here are in better shape in relationship to HIV than maybe everywhere else in the world, given the amount of current cases we have. We're in some ways the cutting edge of a lot of treatment and a lot of support systems. That said, we do have, the reason we shifted away from a broad spectrum these assessments into these sort of subgroups and sub-subgroups with COLAs is because what we were seeing was there were a lot of smaller unmet needs that were not necessarily constituting a large aha shift in funding, but were often most effectively met by using carry forward funding and smaller amounts of funding. And I would say that virtually every single year since we've shifted to this model of doing a more focused subgroup style, like targeted group, we have in our recommendations come up with things that are specifically fundable and have become actually support services, or sometimes were just one-time things that actually met need of the community that specifically spoke to it. You know, going back through all of the needs assessments, I can think of a handful just off the top of my head. I mean, for example, in the most recent one that I can think of concretely that was funded was the MedLockers. That came from the needs assessment. That was a thing that went through the process and so I think that if we are, our expectation of this process is we are going to redefine the way we view HIV in the community, I don't know that that's necessarily going to happen. I think something would have to dramatically shift in the community itself and or HIV treatment or whatever for that to be something that takes place. And I think that from my perspective, if we can recommend something that can be effectively addressed with, you know, $20,000, $30,000 in carry forward funding that we can use as sort of mad money every year, and we can work collaboratively with HHS to see that happen, mission accomplished. And we've done that. So to that end, I would say it feels like we are making progress and have been effective.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Dave. We're at the top of the hour, but I want to take a few moments, if you don't mind. We haven't heard a lot from Lee, and he has his hand up. Lee, could you?
Yeah, I mean, I've got lots of thoughts on this, and I'm wondering if we should continue this conversation to the next meeting, if that's okay, because I'm just thinking about the impact. I can't help but think that the pandemic has really affected services and it's affected service providers. And I know that we all know that STD rates are incredibly high right now and have been increasing. So the implications are big. And I think it might be a good idea to kind of just continue this conversation rather than trying to, you know, come up with something right now.
Thank you so much, Lee. I am right there with you. You spoke my thoughts. Thanks so much. And so before we leave this conversation, the next piece is just the next meeting date. So before we leave this meeting, is that I just want to get a consensus around this. Do people feel okay with continuing this agenda item for next month? And I'll just say, instead of, you know, could you just give a thumbs up if that's a good idea? I'm seeing a majority. So let's have this agenda item carried over to the next meeting, which is February the 2nd via Zoom. I want to thank you guys for allowing me to be of service. I'm sorry, I'm too used to AA. this was a really tight meeting. So thanks a whole lot. Is there anything else that need to be addressed or announced before we close the meeting?
Yeah, I want to hook up a hammock to that tree right behind TJ.
It's very distracting. I agree. Well, happy New Year, everybody. We'll see folks on Groundhog Day. And well done, Mr. Mapp. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
Well,
have a good evening, everyone.